In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
And welcome to another edition of the I Spy Radio Show, where every week we help you get a little more intelligence on big government. You know, it's a good rule of thumb for life that when a Democrat blames someone, they're the one who's truly at fault. Here in Oregon, the governor and other elected Democrats are blaming Trump for Oregon being unprepared and understocked for emergencies. The same is true on the national level, with Democrats blaming Trump for not enough medical supplies, gowns, masks, and ventilators, and so forth. It turns out the NIH had drastically depleted the national stockpiles of medical supplies under Obama due to the swine flu and other epidemics, and they just never bothered to restock. Which is not surprising, because that's what happens in government-run healthcare. Here in Oregon, where we have our own form of Obamacare, we were caught completely at unawares. Think of it this way. Socialized medicine run by the government is like one giant cat trying to catch 1,000 mice. They'll run in all different directions. Government bureaucrats can only foresee so much, but free markets are like 1,000 cats, each trying to catch mice. Which of those two systems is going to be more efficient and effective? And as we've said many times here on iSpy, under free markets, patients are customers. Under socialized medicine, patients are liabilities. What has bothered us here at iSpy Radio for weeks now are the numbers that are underlying all of this panic decision-making from the government, not to mention all of the panic-mongering going on out there in the press. We have been very skeptical about the numbers when it comes to the coronavirus, how confirmed cases are counted, how deaths are counted, how they're attributed, and all of it comes down to basic math. We don't know the total infection rate, that's the denominator, so both the hospitalization rates and the death rates could be miles off. So on this week's show, we want some answers. We want some more information about those numbers. And what about the rather odd executive orders that Governor Kate has been issuing here in Oregon? We'll talk with Dr. Bud Pierce to try to get to the bottom of that. And what is going on in China? There is still an awful lot of mystery there, including, could this have been purposeful or just mere willful blindness? We'll talk about China and what's going on there with our second guest, Scott McEwen. I'd like to welcome now Dr. Bud Pierce. He's a senior partner of Hematology Oncology of Salem, one of the last physician-owned oncology practices in the Northwest, but you probably best know him as a previous Republican candidate for governor. Dr. Bud Pierce, it's great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you, Mark. Thank you very much for having me on.
Sure, absolutely. You know, we'd like to kind of start off by talking a little bit about some of these numbers and things that we've seen. We've had this massive shutdown here in Oregon and all across the United States, mainly based on numbers from a single study from a relatively small college in London, Imperial College, that had originally predicted about 2.2 million deaths in the U.S. if we didn't do something. They have now backed off those numbers to a large extent. In the U.K., they've dropped their expected death rates to basically 4% of their initial figures. As a doctor and one-time politician, I mean, was this an overreaction to a disease that we really had very little information about, including good, reliable data?
Well, as said by many people, I like it by Niels Bohr, predictions are difficult, especially about the future. And so, you know, we're really struggling in terms of what we face. We're really relying upon the Chinese experience with SARS, and SARS was a related disease, a related coronavirus disease of the early 2000s. And that was a disease, interestingly, that feces would be eaten by an animal, and then the Chinese would eat it. Mm. And they found that it wasn't very transmissible. So if you did this social isolation, that you would stop the disease. And they did a good job. It was really contained to China. And then more recently, with this pandemic or this viral infection, they thought that they had a transmissible SARS-like disease occurring. So they shut down Wuhan, China. And then the Chinese have reported good results as a result of the shutdown. And so, therefore, I think that without knowing what else to do, the world kind of followed along with that. And again, what we don't really know much about this disease. We know that there is a contagiousness of it. We know that it can be spread from person to person. We don't really know the incidence because we can't test people. We don't have good testing to test. We know that as of now, we have over a little over 200,000 cases in America, about 4,600 deaths. If you think back to the swine flu pandemic, which is probably our best one that we compared to more recently, different germ, it's influenza, thought related to the Spanish flu of 1918. But in that one, we had about 60 million people infected. We had about 275,000 hospitalizations and 12,500 deaths. So we don't know what we're doing. And I think in this era of humankind, with social media and mass communication, the error is on extreme caution. So I think that we really don't know how this is going to play out. We don't know what to do other than, I think, what has been recommended. We don't really know if this is the right course of action, but in the absence of a known course of action, I think this is what the default is. And I think that's where the policymakers are trapped. I don't like the doom and gloom and the certainty of disaster that's playing out and every negative consequence, because I think that's terrifying the population. And you think about when we faced, when you face difficulties, you'd like your leadership to stand forward and say, we face a challenge. There's more we don't know than we know. This is a course of action we've taken. And as success comes out, as we're actually having in Oregon, as I know we'll talk about, that should be brought forward to the population. Again, not a lot of good stories. It's all about doom and gloom and lack of resources and chaos. And my little podcasts are really to try to, in a way, rebut that, because that's not really what's being seen on the ground here.
No, and we have roughly 500 some cases here in Oregon out of a population of 4 million. I guess when I look at here in Oregon, what we did, and really just across the United States as well, especially in places like New York and whatnot, there was this immediate overreach for shutting down large swaths of society. So if Bud Pierce had been governor, what would he have done?
Well, I think you would, you would look hard at the data. I think that you would try to get, more effective testing going. I think that you would tell the population about what has been done in China and social distancing. I think at least certainly initially you would ask for a voluntary method of asking people to try to not transmit the disease. I think certainly the older people, like my 91-year-old mother, is sheltered at home, and she needs to have that done because she gets a cold, she's at risk. I think that at the moment, to do a complete shutdown as we're doing, that's limited in time, not till months and months, is not an inappropriate response. As a short term, I think with continuing to give the population real numbers and letting people know where we really are, because I think the thing that many of us believe and are hoping for is that, in fact, that the transmission and the number of cases and certainly and the deaths will stay low. And then when do we release the economy and get the economy, going back to full activity? Because again, the negative economic consequences are very harsh. So I think that with the way the world is going and the way Washington is going and such, I think that what we would have done, I would have done different really, is a lot more real information, explain to people, try to get them to do what they can voluntarily, and then really let people decide and come together with local officials and things like that. It's hard to really criticize the initial lockdown in many ways, because again, we don't know what we're dealing with. So I don't really think I want to go there, but I think the length of lockdown is very uncertain. Mm. And to say that we're for sure going to be locked down until, June 15th, I think that's in my mind, very uncertain, because a lot of us are hoping, and it may not turn out that way, but it may, that by May things look a lot brighter, and then where do we go from there and how do we release this? So I think that the reality of the world and where we are, even Florida, which has had very few cases, the governor's been holding out. I think it's hard for a governor to hold out in the face of this, the way this is going. But what I would criticize primarily is gloom and doom, doomsday scenarios, stating with such certainty that mathematical models are going to predict the future and that we're all going to die, basically. And if you don't, you know, do that, that's my main criticism. I think we can stand a few weeks of lockdown, honestly. Yeah, I think we can stand that.
Yeah, it just seems like when all of this came out, they immediately seized on that worst case scenario rather than what ought to be the first case scenario, which is let's have at least a little care and caution before we shut down everything. All right, still lots of unanswered questions here on the coronavirus. We'll have more with Dr. Bud Pierce after this. And welcome back. We're talking today to Dr. Bud Pierce. He is an oncologist, and you probably best know him as a previous Republican candidate for governor. And Dr. Pierce, I guess one of the things that continues to bother me is that we just immediately went to this notion that the world's going to end rather than just have a little bit of a caution here. Your thoughts on that?
I agree. And that's what bothered me the most is all the uncertainty, but the uncertainty went to worst case scenario. Again, we have every flu season, and again, this isn't influenza, and this may turn out to be, we'll see how it turns out, but every influenza season, we lose 30, 40, 50,000 citizens. We have 60 million or so cases, and we don't report every tragic case and suffering of every person who passes away in such excruciating detail. And again, it just leads to utter panic. I think what we need to say is we're in the midst of a pandemic. The pandemic is defined as a outbreak of a communicable infectious disease that begins in one area and is going to spread to other areas, and that we need to precautions, and we need to let science guide us, and we need to be cautious because, again, we don't want things to get away from us, but we should always be optimistic because there's a lot of positive events. The healthcare delivery systems, excellent, the citizens are united in their and can communicate in very efficient ways, and frankly, the federal government is going to rain $2 trillion upon us, and with the Federal Reserve banking system, probably upwards of $5 trillion. So, can we withstand a short-term shutdown if we get money to people's hands? If you're making them lock down the economy for public health measures, then I think a short-term respite, that's okay if you explain it that way, not that the world's come to an end and we're all going to die. I think that, again, that's a message that seems to be coming out. That's quite disturbing. I mean, really disturbing.
It's terribly disturbing, and it's just more about panic-mongering than anything, it seems. And there is actually a study that I'd really like to get your opinion on from Oxford University, and it's a very different story. Imperial College, which is a small college in London, they're the ones that have been pushing these dire numbers that a lot of people have been relying on. That's now been picked up by a group called COVID Act Now, which seems to be a lot of the data and whatnot that Governor Cade is appearing to be relying on. But there's this study from Oxford University that says roughly half of the UK is probably already infected with COVID-19. But according to the article, this is a good thing. One, it means only 1 in 1,000 infected people actually need hospitalization. But two, it also means that herd immunity, which is an idea that the virus will stop spreading when enough of the population builds up resistance through becoming infected, and this herd immunity can help fight the spread of the highly contagious disease. What do you make of that? I mean, and if it's true, doesn't it kind of mean that quarantine is probably the wrong policy?
That would be very hopeful. For instance, if we knew right now that over 1 million Oregonians were in fact had been affected, let's say, or even 500,000 Oregonians had already been exposed to the coronavirus, and then we had 690 total cases, and cases mean people that are sick that are tested, and 18 had died, we would quit reporting on this. And so that's really the crucial information that we miss is, we don't really know what the incidence of the disease is. And all we're going by is that the number of sick people who are tested and then our report is being positive, well, then those are the worst cases. And are there really many, many, many people who aren't sick who are just exposed and get over it? Then it really is a much more minor illness. And that, again, is the great unknown that centers. I know that was published in The Lancet, suggesting that maybe the case fatality rate was 0.6%. Again, influenza is 0.1%. It would certainly be higher, but certainly not on a scale that's quite so frightful as being presented to us, right? And so that's what we're up against, is because we can't test. And in the absence of saying we can't test, so we're not really certain, this may not be a bad thing, although we're taking precautions, which is not unreasonable. We come out with, well, we're testing sick people primarily, and they're sick, and so that means that everybody who gets positive is going to be sick, and that's kind of what we're doing. And so again, the hope is that people are getting this disease, it's coming and going, they don't know it, they're getting over it, and that there's only a much smaller group that is impacted with symptomatic disease and a much smaller group that has fatal disease. So it's all conjecture. It's all conjecture. They have some data, and the way they looked at it in the British, again, to give them some idea around the idea of, again, that the for instance, the case fatality rate of people in their 20s might be, you know, 0.3% or 0.03% or some tremendously low number. So they have reasons to believe that. But again, until you can really test people, lots of speculation. Yeah, but the speculation, certainly, there's no evidence to suggest that we're going to have, massive death. It's just not there yet. There's death, but massive death, is the data's just not there to support that. We're very uncertain.
Yes. You know, speaking of some test sites, we've had people contacting us about empty hospitals and test sites. We've had people contact us who have claimed to be healthcare workers that they've been furloughed due to such low need for them. So I'm curious to see it for ourselves. We actually drove by the Salem Hospital, and it looked pretty deserted, especially given normal capacities. But, you know, granted, visitors are being turned away. But even so, it just seemed pretty clear that at this point we're not being overrun, at least not yet. What's the mood there in and around the Salem Hospital? Are people concerned? Are they worried? Are they terrified? Give us some sense on that.
The staff are going about their business and working to take care of patients. Everyone has a lighter than average care burden in general, because we do a lot of work with elective admissions, and frankly, complications of elective admissions a lot of times end up in our ICUs. So the hospital is running around 60% census. They usually want 80 or 90%. They're doing that to reserve beds. So we have upwards of 200 empty beds at the present time, which is a lot. As of last Friday, the total intensive care use by COVID patients in Oregon was running at 5%. And we've had, I think, more cases of COVID in Marion County, which is our hospital, than Portland, which has Legacy, OHSU, Kaiser, and Providence. And I called one of my colleagues at OHSU and said, how are things there? Are they quiet? And he goes, crickets, you know, the idea that no one's there and the crickets chirping. So it's all about caution. It's all about being ready. The modeling says that the best modeling they have says that somewhere between April 10th and April 15th will hit peak load. They want to ensure that they have enough capacity for a surge if it happens. The interesting thing will be, you know, and I hope that this is all not necessary. That's what we all hope, honestly. And again, the workers in the trenches are good morale and they're doing fine. And they're a little upset because on the personal protective equipment, the way we like to do things is to have an abundance and to be able to take it on and put it off every time we enter a room and stuff. And when you have so many patients that are on rule out infection, that makes that hard because you don't know if they have it or not. It even takes us, you know, 5 or 10 days to get a result back on an inpatient. And so it's putting a strain on that equipment, and that is stressing the staff members because they're fearful that if the patient has the infection that they're going to get it. But outside of that stress, people are, you know, positive. They're not fearful. They're doing their job as you would expect them to do, very professional. It's all well in hand. It's totally well in hand. So
good.
It's fine.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and take a break there. Coming up, there are some helpful medicines out there, it appears to be. Hydroxychloroquine is one of them. So why did Governor Kate issue an executive order to restrict it? We'll talk about that next with Dr. Bud Pierce. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show, talking today to oncologist and former candidate for Oregon governor as Republican, Dr. Bud Pierce. And so looking here into Oregon, there is some positive news. Hydroxychloroquine, this appears to be a drug that at least is showing some promise. In fact, there was a doctor in Monroe, New York, had something like 500 patients and 100% recovery rate. And that's pretty amazing to get 100% recovery rate in anything. But unfortunately, though, Governor Kate, well, she and other governors have either moved to ban or restrict this. Here in Oregon, she has issued an executive order to actually restrict this only to people that have confirmed cases of COVID-19 and are sick enough to need hospitalization. So I guess the question then is, why wouldn't you want this to get out into people prior to needing hospitalization, thus preventing them from needing it?
Well, a few thoughts. One is that it's good for the political class to stay in politics and the medical people to be involved in medicine. So that'd be my first comment. And it is interesting that we have national studies going on with hospitalized patients primarily of hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin and some antiretrovirals and infusions of sera from people that have gotten over COVID to put into people that have COVID to help them. And those are going on both in the clinical trial setting, but also in compassionate use so doctors can have access to it. Again, any medicine that's a prescription medicine should be available to medical professionals to prescribe it. And then they know how to monitor it and which patient should have it. And there's some side effects. It's called, they can cause some heart arrhythmias and stuff, but leave it in physician hands and medicine hands.
Yes.
And we have a lot of commitment to the patients and frankly liability on how we do this. So let's leave it in the doctor's hands the way I would leave that. And the political class can probably just say, we trust medicine to do it the right way and trust us to do our job. And things will turn out well.
Well, the funny thing in that executive order was she says this, that the Board of Pharmacy has filed a temporary emergency rule that prohibits the dispensing of chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine for presumptive treatment or prevention of COVID-19 infection to preserve supplies for treatment of malaria, inflammatory conditions, and other uses. I guess the real question is if they're concerned about saving it and, you know, just using it for people who are confirmed, and they say they're concerned about potential shortages, why not then order the pharmacies to buy more of this?
Yeah, I would say the political class should stay out. Let the medicine people decide. I can tell you that when doctors prescribe medicine, they think about what is the chance of disease. I would say in most cases of non-confirmed disease, doctors will be very hesitant to prescribe it. There might be a case where you do that. Leave it to the doctor and the patient. Just stay out of it. It's complicated enough for us within the rulemaking that we have to deal with without having politicians weigh in and get involved with pharmacy boards and such. Just leave it in the hands of the medical professionals and the pharmacists, and we'll get good results. And the more you meddle, the more stress you put on everyone and worry them, and just stay out of it. Just stay out of it, please.
Well, you're being very political. I would just say that she's being stupid, but okay, we'll just leave it with what she said. So. Okay, that's why I'm not in politics. But we've shut down the large swaths of society, huge swaths of the economy. The economy is tanking right now. We've had to have multi-trillion-dollar bailouts from the federal government. They're already looking at another $2 trillion infrastructure bill that they're considering. Okay, so on the other side of this, what happens and what should happen if they all got it wrong?
I think there should be accountability. You know, I've discussed this with many people. I think many people are going to be of the mindset, well, if this was an overcall, if this is an overreach, if you cause a lot of damage, and frankly, health effects, suicides, a lot of things, if your intention was good, but you had the wrong policy, we're going to let you off the hook. I would be absolutely against that. I would vote people out so quick. Mm-hmm. It would just make their heads spin. I think, again, you've made a decision. And frankly, if your decision is correct, then you probably should get the support. It cuts both ways. It cuts both ways. But if we have a huge overreach here with lots of personal and financial destruction and ruined lives, and it turns out that it was based on fear of the leaders rather than solid data, and it never came to fruition, I would absolutely hold them accountable. And maybe that's a Republican way. I don't know. It is result based. I'm not interested in your motives so much as what are the results of your policy. So if the policies turn out to be correct and we look back at it and say, and what we learn about science and policy is good, you're rewarded, re-election, that's a plus for your re-election. If you are way off base and you were very destructive and harmed society, I'd throw every one of them out. Just throw them out and start with a fresh group of people. And that's I think that's accountability, and that's being accountable for your decision making. So I would, and we're gonna find out. We listen to our leaders when they lead us, and if they turn out to be wrong, I think they should be held accountable by the way we do it, is we vote them out.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of people that need to be voted out, Senator Jeff Merkley is one of many that has been out there complaining about things. He had a tweet the other day, says that he spoke with SEIU, Governor Kate Brown, and others about the unconscionable reality Trump has put our frontline workers in. Instead of leaving them to risk their lives with makeshift half measures, he must use the Defense Production Act to meet the urgent need for PPE. So my question to him was, okay, so we spend billions in Oregon every year on health care. With all that cash, I think a better question here is, why wasn't Oregon better prepared? Was there zero planning? So far, we've had roughly 500 some cases. You mean to tell me that with those billions, Oregon wasn't prepared to handle 500 some cases? What are your thoughts?
I think that, again, this is, we had a wake up supposedly with the swine flu in 2008 and 2009. I think it shows we forget too quickly, and that we get self-reassured and sure of ourselves. And there does need to be the realization that infectious disease does threaten us. We do very little research in infectious disease. And one of the real issues is that when pharmaceuticals and others actually want to do the work, there's most of the money goes to things like cancer, which is what I do. And so we lack good antibiotics. We lack planning. We talk all about, you know, screening so people can detect cancer early stage. And all the way from the top to bottom, we don't focus on all the things that, you know, could bother us. We probably spend more on Cascadia planning and tsunami than we do on pandemics. And so, again, what this really means is we don't have the right leadership in place. And it's a failure of leadership. And it's certainly a failure of healthcare leadership also, if you think about how we allocate resources and what we look for. So hopefully, again, we use this wake-up call. We make lemonade out of lemons. And we think more broadly. And again, we've had warnings. We had the flu of 1918. We had 2008, 2009, not that long ago. And that could have been pretty bad. We had the SARS, which wasn't that long ago. So I think, again, it's really failed leadership, because the people follow the leaders. And we have to look at who's leading us and hold them accountable and get rid of them if they're not doing a good job.
Start fresh. Absolutely. So real quick, in about 30 seconds, tell us about your practice. Are you guys staying well? Are you worried about staying well? How's your staff handling all of this?
So we have a great staff. We have a great practice. Cancer patients who have cancer need treatment during this outbreak. We feel safe for our patients. If we didn't, we wouldn't invite them in to get cancer treatment. We feel safe for our staff. It's never been, I think, safer in terms of monitoring and temperature and cleanliness and hygiene and not overloading our facility. So, again, so much good work is being done, and so little chaos. I haven't seen any. So little chaos and disruption, but all we want to talk about is chaos and disruption.
Yes.
So
yeah, really
great confidence in what's going on, and it's going good.
Good. Well, that's very encouraging to hear. Again, Dr. Bud Pierce, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. Great talking to you, Mark.
And welcome back. We just wrapped up with Dr. Bud Pierce. Sadly, we just ran out of time for some questions, but we are planning to have him back next week. So if there are questions that you'd like to ask, just email them to me, mark@ispyradio.com, or tweet them to me at ispyradio. We have a bunch of questions, just didn't have time for them all. But the one question I had really meant to ask him was, what do we do next year? Fortunately, I can ask that of our next guest, best-selling author Scott McEwen, co-author of American Sniper and a really exciting new series of books, the Camp Valor series. Scott, it's good to talk to you. Thanks for being here.
You as well, Mark. Thanks for having me back.
So we have shut down big hunks to the economy and the country. What do we do next year? Is this the new normal? Every new disease comes along and we just shut everything down for 3 months? What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that I agree with the president in that I believe that the biggest thing that concerns this country now is obviously dealing with the health issue, but we must deal with our economy. And I think that if it were me, I would identify the cure, which I think we're pretty darn close to. I mean, with the treatment that we're seeing, the results from, you know, the hydroxychloroquine and the Zithromax. And with it seems to me like there's some zinc that is helping too. And I watched a doctor's interview on that, and seems as if that zinc helps to open up the cells.
Yes.
And allow the byproducts of the Zithromax and the hydroxychloroquine or chloroquine or whatever other substance they decide to use is having good treatment. I mean, and I'm seeing results, Mark, that show excellent treatment and excellent results.
Yes.
You know, to the point of almost 100%. And
yeah.
So
yeah, well, certainly
if you got 100% cure.
Yeah, certainly that Dr. Yeah. Monroe, New York, that's what he was seeing. He had 100% cure rate.
Right. And to me, if you've got 100% cure rate, you're dealing with the complications for people that are either not getting there or not getting treated quickly enough. It seems to me that once this gets to the point of pulmonary, you know, either difficulty or, you know, heaven forbid, you know, shutdown, then you've got a real problem. So I think the key is testing, get it identified. If you have the symptoms, get to your doctor and get the treatment. And I think that is the key to the beating of this virus, which is out there. I mean, there's no way we can avoid it. It's out there. I think the social distancing is helping, but I think there's got to be a point in time when we take this social distancing and we put it in perspective and we put the healthy individuals, the cured individuals, those that are back there out on the street, and we get this thing going again, because we got to get this economy running.
I agree. And since you mentioned the hydroxychloroquine, that had come up in, with our last guest. And here in Oregon, like a lot of other places, they are actually trying to limit access to that, which really doesn't make a lot of sense, because if you're concerned about these hospitalizations and you've got overwhelmed systems, or that's the, you know, meme right now, you would want to get this into the hands of people that have it but aren't serious yet, because you want to obviously cure it, thus preventing them from ever going to the hospital. You know, it's odd that all but one of the states so far that has either banned this or limited access to hydroxychloroquine, they're all Democrats. And, you know, it used to be that people used to joke about it that if Trump cured cancer, well, Democrats would refuse to take the cure. I mean, it really is rather weird. I don't get the Democrats' response in all of this, because it's almost like they're trying to kill Americans rather than try to help at this point. It's just weird.
No, it's beyond that. I think it's beyond, if you will, strange. It's gotten to the point I think, you know, irresponsible at best, and possibly using politically, motivated rhetoric, like we saw with the governor of Michigan, who did it, and then she was overruled by the doctors. I mean, when does HIPAA come in play? When does HIPAA, which basically says the doctor cannot be interfered with in the relationship with the parent, with the patient, why does the governor of the state, who is completely out of control, able to second guess doctors who are saying this is what we want, we need to do it? We need to get these politicians out of that loop.
Yeah, well, apparently that only applies if you're trying to get an abortion. You have to stay out of that relationship. But I mean, it's just bizarre that they're doing this. And so early on, it seemed like the left seemed to be cheering more for the virus than they were for America. But it's just pretty weird what they're doing. In terms of the Democrats, you know, my opinion of Democrats, elected Democrats, I should say, was already pretty low. But it's gone exceptionally lower after this whole coronavirus bill, with Nancy trying to pack leftist wish lists in there. But now it really is like even some of the run-of-the-mill leftists are showing what hateful people they are when they attack Mike Lindell, the MyPillow guy, when he retools his factory to start producing these masks that everybody says that they need. And you know, they say character reveals itself in times of stress. I mean, what I'm seeing from the left is a bunch of opportunistic, loathsome American haters at a time when we should be coming together. And what are your thoughts on what you've been seeing?
I think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to have to explain a lot of these decisions that they've made. And I think you're exactly right. And I think that history is always the best predictor of what they really, really wanted to do. And if you look at what historically these people have made for decisions being politically motivated, as opposed to those that are health and safety motivated, I think you really kind of define that party in a way that people maybe need to take notice of. And I think people are taking notice of it. I think the president's polling numbers going up is really freaking them out. I think it bothers them. And I think the fact that CNN and organizations like that would not even run a presidential address during basically a wartime. And I consider this to be wartime, because I consider this to be a war with this virus. And for them to irresponsibly possibly not even run an update and an address by the president to the nation just shows what their true political motivation is, and that it exceeds their desire to see this get better. And, you know, I think the people are not stupid. I think we're going to see a real, real comeback on this, Mark. And, you know, I don't want to talk politics in the middle of a war, but by the same token, if they're using politics to avoid winning the war, then by God, they should be held responsible for it.
And not just not winning the war, but actively undermining the efforts to win the war. That's what I find so disturbing. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break. Coming up, a look at China. We already know that they're lying to us, but is there something deeper going on there? That's next with Scott McEwen. And welcome back. Scott McEwen, New York Times bestselling author of American Sniper, is our guest today. And since you're locked inside, now would be a good time to order his latest series of books, the Camp Balor series, especially if you've got young adults at home. But they're a lot of fun for adults as well, as we can personally testify to. So, Scott, with everything that's going on and all the questions being asked, China really seems to be in the middle of all of this. And there are a lot of unanswered questions still. There's an article that you had sent us titled, "Is Coronavirus Outbreak the World's Biggest Intelligence Failure?" They raise some really interesting questions, but let's start with the title question. Is this virus outbreak an intelligence failure? How did we not see this coming?
Well, I think that's the biggest question that we're going to use for the future, Mark, isn't it? Because don't we have to essentially be able to see where this is happening, when this is happening, identify it, and shut our country off from it? Because unfortunately, intelligence is only as good as quickly as you get the intelligence. And obviously, we did not get the intelligence quickly enough. Now, there was a few things that hindered this president in making those intelligence decisions. And I think one of the biggest things was the WHO, who is, I believe, a suspect United Nations organization, who is now currently run from the information I have received and I have read and vetted some from other authors that are very good research people, that this guy has a communist background, that he was supported heavily by the Chinese, and that his decisions and his communique that this virus, 10 days before Trump shut down China, the WHO said that this virus was still only animal to human transmitted, human to human transmission. That is completely irresponsible. So if we're going to use our intelligence sources from this point forward, it cannot be organizations such as the WHO.
Yeah, well, it certainly gets down to who you trust. And I've seen similar articles, probably certainly not from the same sources that you have. They basically said the WHO is now a Chinese organization, being run directly from China. So, yeah, it's going to be really questionable. You did mention that Trump was hindered in some way. So let me put my tinfoil hat on for a moment. We know that the U.S. intel community did not, and to a large extent still do not, like President Trump. Is it possible they purposefully dropped the ball on this and didn't give the president good analysis to try to make him look bad? We certainly know that there were some on the left soon after the election that were actively encouraging the intel community to give President Trump bad information. What are your thoughts on that?
Boy, I tell you, if we're going that far, Mark, I consider that to be acts of treason. And
yeah.
So, you know, and so I'm not prepared at this stage. I don't have solid information that is true. But I do know that this president has been roundly attacked by that same intelligence community.
Yes.
I do know that there are those within that community that were behind this whole Russia hoax, which, by the way, was still in process, this impeachment thing, when he should have been focusing on matters such as this, and so should his intelligence people. And so I think that we've completely lost our priorities at a minimum. If there is people within the intelligence community that intentionally did not give him this information, then I think they should be heavily prosecuted for that act.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it comes back to some of these people truly hate Trump more than they love America. And you can see where some of them would be willing to sacrifice American lives if it meant taking down Trump. And I think that's horrible. The essence of that article is that it hints that this virus might possibly have been a biological and certainly an economic attack on the rest of the world, because they're already up and running again. We certainly know that communist China thinks nothing of murdering millions of their own citizens in the past. They are currently literally exterminating minority ethnic groups. They are also harvesting organs from still living prisoners. I mean, this is clearly not a moral regime here. Could COVID-19 be a biological attack or simply a matter of China not telling the rest of the world what was really happening?
I've seen reports both ways, as you have, as to whether it was actually a created biological attack. But query for a moment, which I think is more interesting in that Indian article, the one that we're referring to from the, I believe it's WION News in India, when they posture the question, who benefited at the end of the day from the 1 month delay between the time that the Chinese had identified this as being a corona and still were allowing people to move freely out of that country, i.e. I've seen estimates of 5 million people actually flew in and out of those regions, you know, from that eastern part of China. If that is true, and they knew that they had a corona, which every doctor on the face of this planet knows coronas are extremely dangerous, if not, you know, pandemic potential, then why in the hell did they not inform the world sooner of this outbreak? And why wasn't the world told to be ready for it and basically to shut this off? Because China, if they exported it to the rest of the world, would benefit from the rest of the world having it as well as China having it in a large degree. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Well, I am dubious about it being biologically engineered. I just kind of lean towards the latter, that China is simply not telling people the extent of the damage out of fear of looking bad. And it's unfortunate regardless. The numbers out of China were clearly not getting accurate details and still haven't to this day in terms of spread, in terms of number of cases and actual deaths. Some people are saying that the reality may be 10 times the numbers of those that have been reported. Sean Hannity had tweeted out an article, I think it was last week, that said there might actually be up to 26 million Chinese dead from this, considering the fact that 26 million cell phone accounts had suddenly been switched off. And the reason they think that that may be deaths rather than just people canceling their account is because China apparently requires people to have a cell phone so that they can track you through GPS. In fact, you can't even get on some of the public transit unless you have the official app. So what are your thoughts there?
Well, once again, somebody's got a lot of splaining to do, but I believe that the numbers are grossly understated. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind from a statistical standpoint that it's been grossly understated. And the only real question is how much. And yes. And I think if you look at how much happened here and the fact that they're putting out 81,000 cases and whatever the number of deaths, which is, 10,000, I don't even know what the number was, but at the end of the day, it's false. And I think there's several different pointers, the urns being delivered there for the crematoriums that have been running nonstop, the internal people saying that this thing is there. And the other thing you got to remember too, Mark, is before this whole thing happened, China was then experiencing a mini revolution, at least in Hong Kong and other parts of their country. Yep. It was spreading to, and you know what? That's all gone.
Yep,
and I'll bet you all those people are gone too.
Yeah, it's very possible. Any model is really only as good as the numbers, and that's what we're being driven right now by in the government is all of these models. But when you have bad numbers, the model itself is going to be very flawed. All right, coming up, our last segment with Scott McEwen. Looking forward. Stay with us. And welcome back in our final segment now on the iSpy Radio Show, talking today to best-selling author Scott McEwen. Be sure to check out his new series of books, the Camp Valor series. We'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com. And so, Scott, in the time that we have left here, one of the things is certain, and we were talking about that on the way out of that last segment, is that we simply do not have good data at pretty much any level right now. And what bothers me, really, is that the coronavirus deaths are being attributed to coronavirus when they may not, in fact, be coronavirus at all. And I mean, it may have been something else that killed these people. I really honestly think that going forward here, especially preparing for next year and in years subsequent, I think Trump should issue an executive order that through the DOJ, there's going to be fines and actual imprisonment for people who either misattribute these CV deaths or overinflate numbers of hospitalization and infections, especially if it's being used to gain additional funding. I also think that he needs to issue an executive order that every dollar spent really needs to be tracked. I mean, Democrats who use this crisis to slip millions or billions to their political minions, including their affiliated and allied nonprofits, there's got to be a huge penalty for that. We need to open the books like never before. What are your thoughts on that?
I think you're exactly right on that, Mark. And I would second to say that in the event that people are intentionally trying to, you know, fool the American people as to what's going on, then they're trying to make the people more fearful. And, you know, and I think that that is reprehensible in and of itself. But I think that fear factor is what these the mainstream media and others are dealing with. And, you know, and I posted something up earlier and I believe it and I mean it. Fear is infectious. It as is strength, yes, and resolve. Yeah. Be strong and infect others with your strength in times of need. I think all of us need to pull together as Americans. Don't worry about if we're D or R or, you know, or you know, LGBT or whatever else. We're fighting this as Americans. Yep. We need to lock arms. We need to make decisions that make sense for this country to get back on its feet. And we need to come back stronger than we were before with good policies in place that avoid this type of intelligence, you know, if you will, failure that we've seen with this one. And I consider it an intelligence failure because in the future, people have seen what how bad this infection can cause, you know, and essentially cripple a country like us without ever having to fire a shot. So this war is here. Let's deal with this war and let's make sure it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, I certainly agree. And in terms of those numbers, what we're seeing here in Oregon, what bothers me is the official health authority, the Oregon Health Authority, is lumping some of those numbers together. They're just giving you totals on things. They're not breaking it down by hospital. They're not breaking it down even by county in terms of cases and deaths and stuff. And that's disturbing when they do that to me because it totally removes the transparency. You're being asked to trust that these numbers are accurate, and we have no means to track any of that. Scott, real quick, 30 seconds. What are some things that you see, especially that we need to focus on to prevent this in the future?
I think we need to focus on the fact that if we have these outbreaks from other countries, we need to immediately isolate and shut that down from being able to get into our country. I think that that's something that the president did aptly and smartly, you know, within 10 days of his realization that the WHO was wrong and that this is transmitting wildly, and he made the right call. And that, yes, has saved countless lives in this country at this stage. Second, yeah, of all, we need to make sure that we are prepared with the proper medicines, the proper ventilators, the proper masks, all those things that were never restocked after Obama and basically knew those stockpiles were down. We need to prepare for this type of war in the future because I'm telling you, while this one is bad, I'm not saying that this is going to be the end of this. And no, we just and I'm not saying fearfully either. I'm just saying we have the ability to get ourselves into a position to deal with this in the future.
Yes.
And by gosh, let's do it.
Yep, you can make a better future by learning from today, that's for sure. Scott McEwen, thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you guys again. Keep bringing the word. And you want to get those real numbers, that's for great journalists like you guys. And get inside those numbers and make call those hospitals and make them give you the real numbers. And maybe we'll get to the bottom of this.
Yes, thank you. You know, if we find out that China has been lying, that our own intelligence community has been lying, that Democrats are lying about how they're spending this money, that they're pushing falsified numbers in order to get money, I hope none of that is true. But if it is, well, I'll just leave that there. Just a reminder that Dr. Bud Pierce will be joining us again next week. So if you have some questions for him, go ahead and email those to me, mark@ispyradio.com, or you can tweet those to me using @ispyradio. Get those to me by Tuesday to be sure that we can include those. And while you're doing that, give us a share on your favorite social media because, as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.